confidence in the Lord concerning you, that you are doing and will continue to do what we command. And may the Lord direct your hearts into the love of God and into the steadfastness of Christ. And we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep aloof from every brother who leads an unruly life and not according to the tradition which you received from us.
Okay, so we covered most of this material in the last 2 weeks. So we'll be picking up this morning in verse 7, because that's going to be the new material. And so we start there, but we remember verse 6 really is the key, and that is there's a command. You remember the special word for command that Paul uses in 1 Thessalonians? It's not used very often anywhere else, but it's used here. It's a word that means authority being passed down from above to people below. And we looked at this verse last week. He that receives whomsoever I send receives me, and he that receives me receives him that sent me. So we have this chain of command. God sent Jesus. Jesus sent the apostles. If we accept the apostles, we accept Jesus. If we reject the apostles, we reject Jesus. So that's what this word is inferring. And so it's always a good idea. This is the third of four times that it's used here in these books. So you know how you ought to follow us. So let's look directly at that now. So Jesus commanded the apostles to do what in Matthew 28, 18 through 20? Teach them to
observe,
right? Everything that I have, I'm waiting for it,
commanded
you. Okay, so if they're teaching to observe, shouldn't they be observing themselves? And that's the point here. Paul is saying, you know how you ought to follow us. Now, the only way I think it's a necessary inference that the scriptures were recorded in such a way that only the things that the apostles did that can be imitated are recorded. Now, there's a couple of examples, blatant examples, where Peter does something wrong, but how's it dealt with? I rebuked him to his face because he was not acting orderly. Now, is there anything about that that we couldn't follow? So, the point is, you know how you ought to follow us. Now, we get a new word here, actually two new words. We have that word mimeo, which we talked about last week. What's a mimeograph machine? It's a copy machine. So it takes your master, makes exact replicas. And the other term is the Greek word tupos, which means a type. And that is when you have a form, like you have a plate for the dollar bill or the $50 bill or the $100 bill, and you get the right paper, when it comes from the press, what do you have? Have an exact replica, right? Because it is. It is a $100 bill or it is a $50 bill. Now, Paul uses both these terms in the next few verses. So, you know how you ought to mimic us, imitate us. We are the master copy, and what are you supposed to do? We're supposed to be just like them. And so, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the lesson this morning, the sermon this morning, and talk a little more about tradition and how traditions have been handed down, and which ones we can follow and which ones we'd better not follow. So, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because we preached on it last week, but you see in the middle of, about 2 inches down from the top of the page where it says, join in following my example, the things you learned and received, and heard and saw in me, these do, and God will be with you. So we have these commandments, and again, when we talk about commands, examples, and inferences, what is it that the denominational world mocks and scoffs at? Actually, what two things do they mock and scoff at? Examples and inferences. Okay. Yeah, if you've got a direct command, they'll listen to you. But when you talk about taking the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week, is there a command for that? No. There's only an example and an inference. When the disciples came together to break bread, how do we know that's the Lord's Supper? They came together to break bread. What if it's a meal? Well, there's a necessary inference there, because they don't come together. The disciples don't come together on the first day of the week to eat, because what does Paul say about eating in 1 Corinthians chapter 11?
Do it at home.
So if they're coming together to eat, is it the Lord's Supper or is it a common meal? Has to be the Lord's Supper. But how many denominations are following that criteria? Oh, about none. Very few of them are following that. And when you show them, okay, this is a necessary inference. Oh, that's a hermeneutic that was created by Alexander Campbell, and you have your same creed book just like we do. And we'll address that again in the sermon this morning, because I really want to nail that down. So you can follow us, because what did we not do? Middle of the page there. We were not disorderly. You remember what that word means? Breaking ranks. Okay, this is a little different word than the one we saw earlier. So this one means to behave irregularly, to be disorderly, soldiers marching out of order or quitting the ranks. In other words, they've left. And what does the sergeant do if they break ranks? Probably don't do it anymore, because you can do anything you want anymore. But what did they used to do?
They used to scold them.
Yeah, well, scold's gentle, isn't it? Go do 50 push-ups, or go run a couple of miles, or, you know, wake up. All right, they were not disorderly, and that's my point. I don't think there's any disorderly conduct in the Scriptures recorded about the apostles and prophets, because if there were, then this verse couldn't be true. We were not disorderly among you. That's why you can follow us. And so this is a very important element. And if you look at the bottom of the page there, we need to walk properly. This is walking in the ranks. Walk properly. Walk worthy of the calling. Walk not as the rest of the Gentiles. Walk in love. Walk as children of light. Walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. So a disorderly walk disregards those things. When you see a Christian who's not walking in the light as he is in the light, what do you know? We're going to follow that person? And there's a real important reason for this, because in many churches today, the elders or the preacher is no longer walking orderly, and the brethren should stand up and take care of that, but what do they often do? They follow the Pied Piper, right? The blind leading the blind. And you don't want to be blind. We need to see this. Virgil, you had a point?
Yeah, just a thought. This matter of, and then we're talking about the walking and properly as in the day, and walks are not as fools, but wise. Are we looking here at what we commonly call, and I think there is something to it, body language, the way we conduct ourselves, maybe without even saying a word? And we see that in our society.
Right.
Yeah. And there are a lot of examples that I could take and think of. It's probably not the place to do it here. But we see these things in the workplace, in the neighborhoods we live in the grocery stores we go to. And you kind of take and put a place in your mind when you see this kind of conduct with the body language that I'm calling it. There's a problem here. I may not know exactly what it is, but it's not good.
Right. Well, think of one example here. I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures. You really can't even look at them. But these college students on spring break right now, have you seen what they're wearing?
Yeah.
Would a Christian fit into that culture?
No.
See, we're supposed to be modest. The traditions handed down from us, the way that we walk, is that male and female are modest. But the traditions of the culture, what do you see?
Immodesty.
Total immodesty. It's total immodesty. And that's just one example. I mean, we see it in the moral realm, we see it in the ethical realm, and I'm going to be careful here because I'm preaching my sermon now, so let's hold off on that. All right, let's go ahead and turn to the next page. Now we get to the specifics. We've been talking in generalities because they are general. We are to follow the apostles in the way they take the Lord's Supper, in the way they baptize, in the way that they worship, all of those things. But specifically here, we did not eat anyone's bread free of charge. Okay, so now we're going to move into work because it's the work that's the problem at Thessalonica. And some people want to say that's all this is dealing with. And then the principles that are dealt with here, they only apply if a Christian's not working. What if he's married and divorced and remarried in an unscriptural way? Does this verse apply to that? Yeah. Well, of course it does, but what do they say? It's not part of this. That the only thing that's here, the only thing you withdraw from somebody who's disorderly is if they won't work. Now, I see that as a very false conclusion. But it is talking specifically about this problem of eating bread for nothing. Now, did Paul have the right to do that? Because it wouldn't be for nothing. If the apostles come into town and they're preaching and they're doing the work that they're supposed to be doing, would they be wrong to call that their work and then have the brethren take care of them? We all do that, right? I mean, almost every church in this country is doing that. And almost, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, do we not have a right to forego working? Is it just Barnabas and I? What does that imply about the rest of the apostles? They're getting paid. So, he says, and let's just look at these verses. I'm not going to spend much time on them, but I think it's important for us to understand. So, let's look at those three verses there underneath, actually about 4 inches down. It says, do we not have a right to eat and drink? Verse 6, only Barnabas and I have no right to refrain from working. And then verse 12, if others partake of this right with you, are we not even more? However, or nevertheless, we didn't use this right. And the reason we didn't use this right is because I want to do all things for all men that I might gain the more. So I've used none of these things, nor have I written that so that it should be done to me. This was Paul's normal mode of operation. Now it's interesting, it's just for infant churches. Once the churches grow up, even just a little bit, does he start taking money from them? Yeah. He says, I robbed other churches. To the Corinthians. Now remember, the Corinthians is right after he goes to Philippi, he goes to Thessalonica, he goes to Berea, then he goes to Corinth. And when he says, I robbed other churches, because the churches in Macedonia were sending money to me. What churches are in Macedonia? Philippi? This church? So once the church grows up, when he first goes into town, he establishes the church, he won't be paid. He won't be paid for the entire time that he's there. But after he leaves, when that church has grown a little bit, and they say, Paul, we want to help you with your work, what does he do now? He accepts it. And he tells the Philippians that. In Philippians chapter 1, he says, you've been in fellowship with me from the very first day. Not that I seek the blessing of the money, but the fruit that increases to your account. So Paul understood when a church is supporting a preacher, they're in fellowship with his work. And because they make his work easier and make it so that he can do more work, they share in the fruits. It's like David said many years earlier, which became a statute in Israel. Those who stay with the baggage will receive the same rewards from the battle as those who go out to war. So that's a principle that God looks at here. All right, so toward the bottom of the page, we labored and toiled night and day. Now this verse is directly quoted from the previous book. Okay, and I want you to see that. There's two verses here. First verse is in 1 Thessalonians 2:9. Second verse is in 2 Thessalonians 3:7 and 8. And the bolded parts are the similarity. So right underneath that, I put them down. You remember verses you know. Our labor and toil, laboring night and day. We work with labor and toil, night and day. And then the one on the right there, that we might not be a burden to any of you. That we might not be a burden to any of you. So he's just repeating what he's already said. But he also says, we've been doing this since the first day we came into your midst. So Paul's worn out. These words, we talked about them in 1 Thessalonians, so I'm not going to spend much time on them right now. But I'm beat. I'm dead beat. That's what that first word means, labor. It's just, I work myself to exhaustion. And the second work, or the second word, has to do with wearisome, struggling labor. So Paul goes out and preaches in the morning. In the afternoon, he goes to work on tents. Works on tents for the rest of the day. Then in the evening, he goes out and preaches again. So by the end of the day, he's probably put 6 hours into preaching, 6 hours into tent making. Would you be tired? And Paul, you know, I don't guess he's an old man yet, but we're probably 14, 15 years into his preaching. And we're probably only 13 or 14 years until he says, I, Paul, the aged one. So I suspect he's in his late 40s, early 50s, or maybe beyond. And so as you get older, is it easy to keep that kind of a schedule? But Paul says that's what we did. And the reason is we did not want to be a burden. We didn't want to have a financial burden on the church. Now, think about it like this. When Paul comes into town, establishes the church, and immediately all of his expenses are paid, what are some of the enemies going to say? Yeah, Paul's just preaching for money. He's just like everybody else. How many people come into town preaching something new and expecting money from the people that they preach to? And he didn't want that. That's why he tells us, I become all things to all men that I might gain the more. All right, I'm not going to spend too much time on the rest of that. Let's drop to page 9, the bottom of the page, not because we don't have the authority. So let's go ahead and jump over to the next page. I didn't realize that authority was as broad as it actually is. And so I want to spend just a minute. You see those two definitions about 2 inches down. Basically, it means permission, authority, liberty, or power. So if God has the power to create the heavens and the earth, does he have the authority to create the heavens and the earth? Yeah. So normally we think about authority, we think about the government. The government doesn't have the power to do anything like a creation, but it does it have the power to put us to death? So it has authority, delegated authority from God. But this particular word has some interesting variations, although in this particular context it just means I have the right. I have the authority, I have the right to do this. And so we have the right, but we didn't use it. Because we wanted to make ourselves an example that you could follow. Go ahead, Brian.
Let me take and rehash what you said. Okay. And I don't disagree. Okay, I just, for my own clarification, God is a creator, you might say. He has the authority to create gifts. No question about that. So if he has the authority to create, he can govern it also. Whatever he wants to.
Right.
Our government has the authority to build the building. They can't create it in the sense of speaking it into existence.
Right.
But they can do what they want to with it as long as it's within the realm of their edict that they can do it.
Okay.
So our government has a tremendous amount of authority over us, whether we like it or not.
Right.
And we need to recognize that and work within that.
Okay, and that's what I just said. Only you said it better.
Yeah,
that's okay. Because I didn't say it as clearly as you just did. And that's exactly right. And that's why this word has two different connotations to it. It can be used in two different ways. So when God creates the heavens and the earth, he has the authority. And we call it inherent authority because once you create something, do you have pretty much control over it?
Yeah.
And that's why God has complete control or complete authority. So Paul has a right to do this. And I really like this verse. I'm not going to read all of it, but that verse right underneath, to make ourselves an example. I'm sorry, Patrick. I'll get to you in just a second since I already started this thought. It says, I'm free from all men, but I've made myself a servant of all, that I might win the more. So Paul makes sacrifices as he's around each person so that he can win the Jews, he can win those under the law, he can win the Gentiles, he can win the weak. He does all things to all men. So he's ready to make sacrifices at any moment when it needs to be made in order to help people become Christians. Patrick, I'm sorry, I forgot to get to you. What's up?
Let's go back to 7 and 8 and we'll see example in that. In verse 7, he said, for you yourself know how you ought to follow our example. You were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone food without paying for it. You see that? You are warning people in the church, not about preacher, but people who are in the church, who are lazy. But what I don't mean lazy, who does not want to work, but they want the church to support them, okay, which is very wrong. So he said they should follow his example, because Paul was not only living by the gospel, but he was working with a physical hand to support him. He was a teammate. So as Paul went, he was showing the believer how they ought to work, the follow his example. I mean, they should work to get the bread that
right.
They eat. Okay, we'll see if you go in the same chapter, you read verse 11. He said, we heard that some among you are idle. That means some are lazy. They don't want to do anything. Then he said, they are not busy. They are what? Basically, body. I mean, they were going around passively, talking with other people.
Right.
They were not doing nothing, but they were living on the church support. It happened again in the book of 1 Timothy chapter 5 with the young widows. They were on the list. The church was supporting them. So this is when he addressed the issue that these people should not be on the list. If you read 1 Timothy chapter 5, let comes down to 13. He said, besides, they gave into what? The habit of being idle. You are listening. You see that? And what? Going about from house to house, and not only do they become idols, but also gossipful. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
So they were not working. It's always in the case when people are not working, what they indulge into? Into what? Criminal activity and gossip. Especially people who are depending on the church for support. Not preacher, but talk about members in the church who are not working. What they do is that they get into the habit of gossip, talking about other brethren and other matter that is not relating to what? To the spiritual need of the church. So you are addressing the issue just as you address the issue in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 concerning what? The guy who was sleeping with a father, why? Because this thing was existing in the church as today is existing in the Holy Spirit Church of Christ.
Right.
People are not working. This is why we had to use the Bible, why? To teach the people how to work for their bread and not to be a gospel.
Yeah, I totally agree, Patrick. And what you've done is you've jumped us right into verse 10. So let's go there and let's establish everything you just said. So, verse 10 at the bottom of page 4, even when we were with you, we commanded this. All right, so let's go to page 5 now. We commanded that if a man won't work, don't feed him. If anyone will not work, right at the top of the page there, about an inch down. If anyone will not work. Now, it's really unfortunate because in English, I will go to the store, I will eat my food, I will do this, I will do that. It just means I'm doing something. But if, as the New American Standard puts it right underneath there, it says, if anyone is not willing to work. Are there times when somebody's disabled and they can't work? Are there times when someone's looking for a job but he can't find one? So that's not under consideration here. But if he's not willing to work, he doesn't want to work. And I think that does take us into Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4. It says, none lacked because anyone who had houses sold them and brought the proceeds, and distribution was made to any as any had need. But the problem in Jerusalem was we had 1 million people come into Jerusalem for the Pentecost, and some of them never went home because they had to stay in order to learn the new gospel and to learn the truth, so they stayed on. Now, could they work? Well, if there was a job, they could, but how many jobs are there in Jerusalem? So these people were not idle because it says in Acts 2, they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, breaking of bread, fellowship, breaking their bread at home, and coming every day to the temple. So these people were being trained. And it wasn't an ideal situation, but at that time, they were not able to work. It wasn't that they weren't willing to work. And that's the key. Because, as Patrick just pointed out, and we see this all the time, people coming through the door wanting food, wanting help. Even, I'm a member of this church, I'm here, I don't have, and you call, and they're not a member of that church, or they're a member of that church, but they're not willing to work, and so they're just going from congregation to congregation. What should we do to people like that? I have to tell them no. Is it easy to tell somebody no? Isn't it easier just to give them 20 bucks and say, here, get out of here, or this is all you're getting? Is that easier? But is that what we should be doing? No. If they won't work, they're not willing to work, they will not work. I got better things to do with my life than work 8 hours a day, but I want other people to take care of me, then the command is, don't feed them. So if they're not willing. And now this goes all the way back, as you see it toward the middle of the page here, a little above it. In the sweat of your face, you shall what? Eat bread. That's the mandate. That's the command. And that's what every Christian should be doing. And so those people who think that the church will make our lives easier, we won't have to work. And so we have a mandate here. It requires investigation. When somebody says, I need help from the church, do we just hand it over? No. We go downstairs, we sit them down, we talk to them, we ask questions. Why do you need this money? Well, I don't have any money. Well, why don't you have any money? Because I'm not working. Well, why aren't you working? Because I don't like to work. Okay, now what do? It's pretty simple. Virgil?
We have two scenarios. We have one, we look back into the 20s and 30s, we called it the Great Depression. There was a lot of people in this country wanted to work. There was no jobs available.
Yes, and those people you should help, no question
and
about it.
Churches and neighbors and everybody chipped in to work together. I can't remember my parents or grandparents talking much about people that was not deserving, that was receiving something. Now it's a different thing. There's jobs available if they're willing to take them. It's just a fact of life.
Right.
And so there's really not much reason for the churches right now, unless there's specific instances within the congregation, to do anything any different than to take and tell them, go get a job.
Right. And there's unemployment insurance.
Yes.
There is welfare, food, what do they call it? Food stamps, disability. It's pretty tough not to find a way to be able to get the help you need without coming to the church in the 20th century. And some of those are misused. I think unemployment insurance sometimes is misused. Disability insurance is sometimes. The person doesn't want to work, but they get into a small accident and they build it up. They make a mountain out of a molehill, right? And I'm sure you've seen television shows where they follow these people around and take pictures of them when they're out playing tennis ball and out running and out doing, lifting weights, and then they go to the Social Security office, oh, I just can't do anything. And it'd be nice if the government would do more investigating, wouldn't it? I remember in California, the more kids you had, the more money you got. These women would come into the ER, they'd have seven kids with them, and every one of them was from a different father. And that's what it created. It created an environment of immorality and ungodliness. If you got married, you didn't get any money. If you didn't get married, you got money. So what did everybody do? They stopped getting married. And so the state of California just went further and further down because the government enabled, actually encouraged, immorality and ungodliness. And so a good program, I mean, is it good that the government will help you and the more children you have, the more you should get? Well, yeah, that's a good plan. But not like that, not the way they did it. There should have been some serious investigation. And I remember, never mind, let's not get off into that. All right, so everything that Patrick was talking about earlier, about indolence and members of the church who just don't want to work, is set forth right here, and we will not be able to help those people. If they won't, they will not to work, they're unwilling to work, then that's it. Patrick, you had another point?
Yeah, I did want to share this with the class. At my working place one time, some guys were discussing about Trump, you know, when he was president. And because they said that he was trying to cut down some benefit so that Americans can go back to work, not to be liability on the government, so they can be able to support themselves. So, and the other guy said, yes, he's very right. I support the idea because the more you create an easy life for other people, the more you make them lazy. Because it doesn't want to work, and they are very young. So who you expect to take over the job? You expect alien to come and take over the job. You see? And that will make, it will create a problem in the home, in the society, and more work in the country. Because when you are sitting down doing nothing, how do you want the employer to carry on a business? I mean, they have to hire somebody
right
from different country to take over the land. You see, this is why when you read the Bible, the Ethiopian, 1 million they were going against the children of Israel. Because when the children of Israel were increasing, they said, no, you can't do it. So it will be like the same way when you stop working. What you expect the alien to do? They take over the country, and when they take over, you're there angry. So the only way you can protect your home or your country is for you yourself to involve in you are in working. You see, this is what the scripture, this is what we cut in the church, that what the church said people should work.
Right.
Not to be liability on the church. Because if you liability on the church, how do you want the church to send people out to go and evangelize? Then what will they get it from? Because they have to support everybody in the church. And how are we going to support a preacher too when we're supporting everybody who are lazy? So we have to, you know, present the gospel so that people can be able to go back to work and do.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And we saw this during COVID. Because people couldn't go out to work, the government started taking care of them. And then when it was time to go back to work, what did they say?
We're not working.
We like it the way it is. We're not going back to work. Now, are we all paying for it? Is that why there's such shortages? Is that why inflation is happening? And so all of us are suffering because the government made a decision to help people not to work, and they liked it. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. If I can make more money and have better health care by staying home and not working than going out and getting a minimum wage job, what are most people going to do? I can't go work at this minimum wage job because I can't afford the doctor payments, but I stay home, I get Medi-Cal, or I get this health care from the government. And so, but yeah, and it does impact the church, although as Virgil said, and I think it's true, we are not plagued with this like they were during the Depression. Matter of fact, the churches right now are really getting a pass, because even if a man dies and leaves a widow, if he's got health insurance, I'm sorry, if he's got disability or he's got life insurance, Social Security, Do we need to rush in and start taking care of her? No. Usually she's... Sometimes she's even better off when he's gone than she was when he was alive, because he's made provisions for that. And so we just have to be careful. All right, verse 11 there. Let's go ahead and finish this section up. We hear there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner. Okay, so here's walking out of step, and this is where they're not working at all. Top of page 6. They're not working at all, but they're busybodies. Now, it's really unfortunate we can't translate it the way that the Greeks actually had it worded. They had, they're not working, but they're working around and around and around and around, and they're not accomplishing anything. So they have the same Greek word with the word around, peri, or perimeter, where we get the word perimeter. They're just walking around work. Are they working? No, they're walking around it and walking around it and walking around it, but they're not doing it. And how are they walking around it? Well, they're busy. They're busy from dawn to dusk, but they're not busy doing anything that has any value. And that's where that verse that Patrick read earlier about those widows comes in. They learn to be idle. They learn to be busybodies. And so Paul said, I desire that widows what? Young widows marry and rule the household. She needs to be busy. She can be busy taking care of the household, taking care of the cleaning, taking care of the children. Dare I say that? Is that chauvinist? Is that an issue today? Well, like I say, we have traditions coming down from the church, from the scriptures, and we have the traditions coming down from the world. Is there a clash now? Huge clash. But what are we going to preach? We're going to preach the traditions that are coming down through the scriptures. And if that puts us out of step with the people of this world and brings persecution, well, is that any different from what they were doing in the first century? Exactly the same. So, gossip is one of the issues, but not always. Some people just stay home. They don't do anything. But they're still violating this passage. If you're not working at all, even if you're not a busybody, you still are condemned by this passage. You need to be working by the sweat of your brow. So Paul's command in verse 12, and this would be the fruits of repentance, those who are such we command and exhort through Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. Virgil?
This is a tremendous warning for all of us, whether they're gossips or not, whether they are totally idle or not. Being in this situation opens a door for a lot of problems in life. So we, you know, a lot of sayings have been handed down to us by mother or grandma. You say, well, idle hands is the devil's workshop.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Yes, and that is so true. That is so true. We can take a look at this and say, well, I don't gossip. No, but there are things that take place in that kind of an environment that should not take place.
Right.
Where yeah. If we're working and out making a living and doing what we should be doing, those things don't even come into play.
Right. And that's exactly what God expects from us. And it's interesting, this word quietness, I think we'll camp on it before we finish the class. It refers, and you can look at the definitions here, rest, stillness, silence, conducting oneself quietly. And have you ever heard the expression, keep your head down? And what that means is don't make waves, just do your job. Don't create issues. Don't create problems. Just keep doing what you're supposed to be doing. That's the responsibility of a Christian. A Christian should not be one of these people who's practicing civil disobedience, who is creating strife and troubles and getting involved in things that they really don't need to be involved in. And so Christians should not stand out except as Christians. God doesn't want Christians to be the ones who are involved in these things, because if you are, what does it do to the church? And, you know, there's a limit to this. I remember when Jeannie's dad was on one side and my mom was on the other, and we didn't even know each other at the time. My mom was all for sex education in the schools. This was back in the 60s and 70s. And George was out there, and he was fighting tooth and toenail. Matter of fact, Jeannie was telling me the other day that one of her teachers says, oh, if George doesn't have a problem with this. And so there was a battle going on. Now, would you say George shouldn't be doing that because he's bringing attention to himself and to the church in a negative way because he's fighting sex education? Isn't that what a preacher is supposed to do? But then there's other matters. We're going on strike to make more money. And if a Christian's at the forefront of that, is that really where he ought to be?
No.
See, we need to live our lives in quietness. We don't need to be bubbling up to the top where everybody knows about us for things that are not scriptural. And this is very important because you can bring a lot of shame and reproach on the church even though you didn't intend. What do we call it? Unintended consequences. We're going to get involved in this. The command is that we work in quietness. Just do our work. We don't make waves. We don't stand out. We don't bring attention to ourselves. We preach God's word. We teach the truth. And we live a godly, good example by being quiet and being serene and not getting involved in all of these controversies and all of these conflicts. And again, I'm not going to say you can't get involved in them at all, because sometimes there is a moral component here. And we need to stand for the truth, and if it brings persecution, so be it. Was Jesus pretty outspoken? Yeah, but not in the negative way that's being described here. All right, any other thoughts? Paul, are you...
Yeah, I
can see your hand out in the aisle, but it's not up yet.
I'm not sure how to frame this, because
okay.
I'm a veteran.
See, Paul's like this. You watch his hand, you watch his hand, and then when it gets up...
I'm a veteran, and when I enlist, to defend the Constitution of the United States against the U.S. and all enemies foreign and domestic. And so, I don't know where that line. I do not want to participate in the discourse that's going on in this world, the discord that's going on in the world. But at the same time, is there going to be a point where I'm going to have to pick a side here? And I understand that I don't expect anybody else to follow me down certain paths that I may have to take.
Right.
So, how do I know if I'm in the right way according to God's word? That's going to be something I'm going to pray about. So I'm just, in situations like that, I'm just trying to figure out where the line is. Yeah, and it's a tough line.
But if we're going to err, we need to err to the side of quietness, and we need to err to the side of not creating other issues except for spiritual things. And we better stop there or we'll be going right into everybody else's time. So thanks, everybody. We'll pick up next week and we'll finish the book, and I'll have some ideas. If you have some ideas, let me know, and we'll go from there. Thank you.